Welcome to Friday and welcome to KUOW's Week in Review. I'm Bill Radke, so happy to be talking about the news of the week with you and with Zeki Hamid, Program Director for Humanities Washington, Joni Balter, host of Civic Cocktail on the Seattle Channel, Paul Guppy, Vice President for Research at the Washington Policy Center. Welcome, everybody.
Thank you.
Great to be here.
Thank you.
Great to see you. This week, the Seattle Times reported that for as long as possible, KUOW kept its plan to buy public radio station KPLU a secret. KUOW's license is held by the University of Washington. The Times reports that before a public meeting of the UW Board of Regents, the school and the station kept their KPLU negotiations quiet by using intentionally vague language on the meeting agenda. We asked Toby Nixon with the Washington Coalition for Open Government, did the UW break any laws?
Of course, there's technically legal, and then there's what's right and what's consistent with the spirit of the law. And I'm not seeing something that is a clear technical violation of the law, but they've clearly violated the spirit of the Open Public Meetings Act.
The University of Washington and KUOW's general managers say you don't negotiate a business deal in public. It went public at that Regents meeting. Now KPLU fans are trying to buy the frequency themselves. Good luck to them. That's how it works. Is there a bad guy here, Joni?
Well, I don't know about that. I first want to congratulate all of you for bringing this up on this show. That takes a little bit of courage, and it's community-minded, and I hope we're all invited back.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, it's hard for me to be impartial, and the listener could wonder, are the guests or the host, are we being, can we be transparent about this? I think I can. We want to be. That's why we're talking about it,
I appreciate that. That's way cool. And I take a sort of a tortured middle ground on this. You know, I covered City Hall for a fairly long time, and property deals were done in executive session. They're constantly done for that. Why? What's the reason? Because if you do them in the open, you end up bidding up the price of whatever it is you're trying to buy. So you certainly don't want to do that. But that sort of, in my mind, weighs against this sort of other thought about the big public and public radio.
Mm-hmm.
And so I understand keeping this deal quiet. It sort of gets down to me between commission and omission. In other words, like as soon as you're trying to sort of change or adjust the story of who approached who, and that was on the part of KPLU's ownership, that's commission that leaves me feeling, you know, less happy about the whole thing.
Yeah, there was some question as to what, you know, KUOW says that PLU approached KUOW and wanted cash for this asset so they could focus on education and had already offered it to another buyer outside public radio. That's
sort of what, yeah. So what had happened. But also, yeah. What about erring on the side of aggressive openness? You know, there's this other voice in my head that's talking about that. And asking another question was, how many other buyers were there? Was there the ability to bid up the price, as I'm mentioning at City Council? Were there no other buyers there? Or was there just this long line and you had to sort of keep this secret? So tortured, I admit, but that's kind of where I'm at.
And I don't want to be tortured about all the weeds about a business deal. But I ask because, Zeki, I think KUOW listeners would want to know, should I be mad at my public radio station? Isn't that basically what we're asking?
Right.
So I'm asking different people's opinions on
yeah,
that.
Yeah, anger is something that I kind of was interested in when I was looking at the story. And I think it's justified. So I looked up some statistics here and about confidence in public institutions. And so right now, I think KUOW is looked at by some people as the big corporation because they're buying something smaller. And it turns out that big businesses have the second to last in terms of confidence in public institutions, with only 9% saying they have a great deal of confidence and 12% saying they have a lot of confidence in big businesses.
You're saying KUOW is big in terms of what? Listenership
perception.
Or budget
perception.
Perception?
Just about perception. And KUOW might be in the perception as the smaller entity here.
You mean KPLU?
Yeah, sorry, KPLU. Uh-huh. So they small business ranked second overall in public confidence. By the way, just really quickly, what do you think was number one in confidence?
Not journalists.
Military.
No, military. Exactly. No, and what was last?
Did you hear that? I said the military.
Yeah, that's right. It is the military. What do you think was the last in public confidence?
Journalists and loggers.
Politicians. No.
Congress.
I'm picking on loggers.
Congress.
So because of these statistics, I think as a public, we get angry at somebody that is considered a big entity
going and buying up something that's a smaller entity. So I think the anger is justified. I can say I don't not necessarily agree with it. I just see why it's happening.
Okay,
what do you
turn.
Think, Paul? It's your turn.
Yeah,
is there anybody we should be disappointed by in this story? To you, you're a more casual observer.
Yeah, exactly. I am definitely on the outside of this issue, and maybe disappointed is the right word rather than angry. I don't feel that strongly about it. But so, negotiating a difficult, complicated, costly business deal privately, that makes sense. Media consolidation happens all the time, but in this case, I think. And maybe KUOW thinks, looking back, that it would have been smarter to present the agreement in a public forum and solicit comment and say, we're going to have a period of time when we want to hear from the public about a business deal that we have negotiated. It's got a price tag. Here are the deals.
Before the UW Board of Regents would have had a chance to sign off on it.
So rather than it kind of sort of leaking out because the Board of Regents met and they had minutes and then the public, quote, found out about it, to announce it ahead of time and ask for people's comments and listen to what the public has to say, I think would have been a very important part of the process.
Is there an outcome that you – a different outcome that you would have wanted from what happened, which is the Board of – it's in the meeting, it's public, everybody's informed, and the friends of KPLU are fundraising to buy the thing instead of the University of Washington, and it's up to KPLU who they want to sell it to. So in other words, what was the bad outcome? Yeah, Would there be a better outcome?
So the ultimate outcome might be okay. Again, my view as a news consumer is that these are two media organizations who are trying to come to agreement. You know, I believe very much in private business. And when organizations come to an agreement and do a business deal, they are accountable to their listeners and to the results. Mm-hmm. This could all, a year from now, come out very badly, in which case, you know, KUOW is going to have to deal with that. But as far as putting the deal together, I think that was fine. But I think it would have been smarter to just be up front and ask people, what do you think about that? KPLU could have said, we are considering this offer from KUOW at certain dollar amount. However, if someone else wants to raise money and make an offer, we're also open to that. And so they could have been proactive in presenting that, and I think they would have reduced a lot of the surprise that people are feeling now.
Right. So it's just the process. It's just that you see the process as could have gone in a better way.
Yeah. Right. More open. Right.
But also think about what has happened. So once it all blew up and it didn't look so pretty, you have KUOW and the president, the brand new president of the University of Washington, saying, okay, let's see what KPLU listeners want, opened the process, and those folks are at $6 million from what I've read. And so it may end up okay. At the very least, what KUOW and the president of the University of Washington was smart PR. But at its best, it was, this is the second part of the process, by opening it up to the KPLU listeners, it would always have been tainted if they hadn't done this. This gives it the chance to be right.
Sure, but and as I'm sure KUOW knows, running a radio station is really hard. Okay, so even if
you're saying I make it look difficult,
well, the on-air talent is fabulous. But you know, running a station, whether private or public radio, is challenging. And so even if KPLU is ultimately purchased by independent listeners, I mean, they might not make it. And in a year or two from now, they may be coming back to KUOW saying, well, please consider buying us now. But again, I think that process should be more open.
Okay, bottom line, are you going to – do you listen to KUOW?
Quite.
And will you continue?
Absolutely.
And if so, how much would you like to pledge? And would you like
take this little envelope here?
Yeah.
Spoken like a true professional.
Would you like a mug? Well, the group Friends of 88.5 FM is trying to raise $7 million to buy and run the station. They're around $6 million, and they have until June 30th to raise the money and then negotiate a deal with PLU, who has the right to reject or accept any offer. Mm-hmm. And we're going to continue to talk about the news of the week here on KUOW. For example, are you a bad person for watching Annie Hall or Manhattan Murder Mystery or for showing Cafe Society at the Seattle International Film Festival? That discussion coming up in about 10 minutes. KUOW's Week in Review. I'm Bill Radke with Joni Balter, Paul Guppy, Zeki Hamid. A group of Seattle University students are holding a protest sit-in at the school's humanities college. These students want the college to be more inclusive, and that means a lot of things. One of them is a curriculum that's not Eurocentric. Where is the feminist theory, the critical race theory, Buddhism, social movements, alternative views of American history? What is a private American Christian school's obligation to diversify its reading list? Let's ask a graduate of that very program, Paul Guppy.
Okay, so you're coming to me first.
Yeah, well, you did. You went to Mateo Ricci College in Seattle.
I did. I graduated from the first class of this program at Seattle University. It's way back in the 70s. And I'm very appreciative of the education that I received there. And I'm an enormous fan of the humanities and literature and liberal arts. So I'm a big proponent of that. But I will say something controversial about this particular case, and that is I think these students are speaking from a position of privilege. I mean, they are in an elite program at an elite university, and there are lots of contemporaries their age who are – they don't get to sit in a classroom and read great books or discuss with the professor because they're working. So a lot of young people are in the workforce. They don't have the opportunity to study and read and improve their minds. So
what should they be doing with their privilege then?
Yeah. So on that point, two things. One is it's great to ask for more diversity, but the purpose of a liberal arts education is to teach you how to read and understand and be open. And by the way, the Jesuit education tradition is extremely open to global culture and always has been. And even when I was in this program in the 1970s, they had African writers, they had writers from South America, and they were introducing people that were new for the purpose of exactly that, expanding your mind to think more broadly. So I think they do that. To the extent that a student might be saying, I don't like what's on the reading list, how come we're not having more feminist authors? My answer is, what's stopping you? You have a liberal arts education. The purpose is for you to choose and access those ideas and authors that you are interested in. So pursue the life of the mind wherever that leads you. You shouldn't, I think, complain to your professors because you don't like what they're recommending. Recommend something yourself.
We happen to have a college teacher here, Zeki. You teach Middle Eastern Film Studies at Edmonds Community College. Create your own reading list, students. Is that good enough?
No, it's absolutely not. I'm going to talk a little bit about diversity in two segments here. First of all, I want to say that the percentage of full-time college and university professors that are white is 82%. So that is a huge deficit when we have teachers of color and white teachers. And why does that matter? So I'll speak from my own experience. For me to stand up in front of my class, and my class I have a lot of Arab students that come and take my class, to see somebody that looks like them is very important for two reasons. One, it's not just because it spring some confidence in them to see somebody who looks like them who is at this position. But two, they're going to be more receptive to criticisms of the Middle East and Middle Eastern culture from me than they are of somebody who is not of Arab origin. So I think diversity really, really matters. And with that, I think the diverse teachers bring a diverse curriculum and you really open up people's minds to these alternate views. Because I don't think that people are going and actively just – I know you said, you know, Paul, you said they can go and put their own reading list together, but the reality is they're not doing that.
But that's encouraged by the meaning of liberal arts.
Exactly. But
say.
At that young, when they're that young, I think the teachers need goad them to.
Okay. But again, it's for a lifetime. So liberal right. arts is to train your mind with the skills and intellectual ability to literally read any text and understand.
But exposing them very early on to these texts is going to help them tremendously. It's going to help them navigate life at an early age. I wish I had that when I was growing up. I didn't have some of these teachers that really – I mean, I did have finally, especially in grad school, that people that really shaped my way of thinking. And I wish I had that when I was in high school, but unfortunately I didn't.
So I'm a professional.
Can I first ask Zeki about curriculum? Because something that Paul brought up. And I want to hear from you, Joni. How this idea of changing the curriculum, diversifying the curriculum, that sounds to me not a non-academic, like it's pretty easy to do. Put in, you know, put something new on the syllabus. Is it that? Is it low-hanging fruit to diversify your curriculum, change your curriculum, or is that harder than I'm realizing?
I think it's a little harder because the teachers have to be trained in those texts. They need to really study that text in order to accurately portray and have the discussion with their students about what it's all about. So it is a little bit harder. I think that needs some training.
Okay. Joni.
So I'm a professional in residence at Seattle U. I teach one quarter a year there. And I love the place, so I should lay that down first. But here's the deal. So it feels to me like the students are customers. And you feel this as you teach there and as you are there, that that we learn from the students. They are teaching us. They are asking to expand this particular curriculum. What's wrong with discussing it? The president of Seattle U, Steve Sundberg, very lovely statement, if I could just read part of it. I cannot pretend to know how deep their pain goes, the amount of harm it has caused, or the extent of our own shortcomings. And he says he wants to work this all out, empathy, solidarity, openness, and cooperation. Now, I will draw a line here. The university can certainly expand its curriculum. It's not that hard. You can add some of the voices the students are asking. I draw the line, however, at the universe. The students will decide who the dean should be. That is for administrators.
Mm-hmm. This group, this one group of students is calling for a dean who they call a racist dean,
yes,
which the Seattle U says is over the top. And
I think that's a little
They're calling for that person to resign.
Yeah, I think
really
the administration picks who are the deans. You don't put that out to a public vote, for gosh sakes. That's silly.
That's a harsh label to have, to say a racist dean. And I'm not really privy to what is the intricacies of the situation, but I just think that is... You can't just throw these big names out there without carefully considering the ramifications.
Usually ends the conversation if
it
you
does.
Call somebody
Absolutely.
A racist.
Absolutely.
Conversation yep. over. I don't know where we're going after that.
Do you even buy the idea, Paul, that it's a problem that there are too many dead white guys in the canon, in the academic canon?
Again, I'm very open about learning and education, and I think people should pursue their interest in what they think is best. One thing about the dead white canon is that it was not created by any central authority. It was created by the experience of readers over many, many centuries. And there are, I don't know, millions of people who wrote books in the past that are absolutely not read today because it's not worthwhile. I mean, at the time that Charles Dickens was writing novels or Jane Austen, there were lots of other novels around too, 150 years ago, and they have all disappeared because no matter who wrote them, they're not very good. So the things that survive tend to be things that human beings are really interested in reading, regardless of race. It's a human experience to read great literature.
But which human beings? I mean, I remember learning about Plato's allegory of the cave when I was in school, too. Mm-hmm. And it's a nice metaphor, but are you telling me there's no African or Asian philosopher who realized that life isn't always what it seems to be?
Yeah, and so that was my next point, is that human creativity occurs around the world, so it's a matter of accessing, and that's what liberal arts education is about, that there are great minds and great writers in other cultures, so let's find out what those are, and that's the path to doing that. So in other words, it's not meant to be exclusive. It's meant to be expansive in learning about the greatest things and the most interesting poetic or human experiences or emotions that people have written in the past.
You should always use an and, you know, this and.
Sure.
Right?
You know. Yeah. You know, there's one other point I want to make that when we talk about diversity, we usually talk about racial diversity, but there's ideological diversity.
Exactly.
And I think the show right before us was actually discussing this mm-hmm. very thing. Tavis Smiley was discussing it. But there are some really amazing statistics here about the lack of conservative professors in the humanities and social sciences. I mean, there's a study that found that only 2% of English professors are Republican, and you contrast that with 18% of social scientists that call themselves Marxist. So I think these are...
Why do you think that is?
Yeah, that's the thing. I don't know if this is a chicken or the egg. You know,
it's chicken salad with eggs on top.
But I mean, conservative teachers are going into the sciences, and are they going there because they are being shunned out of the humanities, or is it the other way around? And I think that's just a little bit more complicated. But I think that the diversity should include ideological diversity
as well.
I'd like to open this up to our listeners. You know, we're live tweeting the program at KUOW, and sometimes your comments will feed our discussion. We're going to talk later this hour about Woody Allen, and do you want commercial companies like REI working in your public parks? And what about transgender bathroom laws? Is the Obama administration going too fast, too far? So let us know how you're feeling about these topics at KUOW. We were just talking about these students at Seattle U at the Humanities College there, continuing. Now it's been like a week and a half holding this protest sit-in. We talked about they're demanding a less Eurocentric curriculum. They're also looking for classrooms upholding the learning of students with historically marginalized identities, the recruiting of a diverse faculty and student body, and, as we said, the resignation of the dean of that college. We're tweeting at KUOW, and we're continuing on the Week in Review in a moment. You're with KUOW's Week in Review with the Washington Policy Center's Paul Guppy and Seattle Channel's Joni Balter, from Humanities Washington, Zeki Hamid, and we are continuing to talk about the big news this week and why it matters. Last night, Macaw Hall, Seattle International Film Festival, opens with the North American premiere of Cafe Society, the new film by Woody Allen, produced by Amazon Studios, by the way. Should SIFF, Seattle International Film Festival, should they have honored Woody Allen this way, given his daughter's claim that he sexually assaulted her when she was a child and spent years grooming her for the assault? Zeki, what do you think?
Wow, this is a really tough one for me. I've been thinking about this all last night and this morning, and I think the reason it's bothering me so much is because it's making me confront my own hypocrisy.
Tell me about that.
You go.
That's always fun.
Let's go.
So I'm not a huge fan of Woody Allen, but he did produce one of my favorite films of all time, which is Midnight in Paris. But I look at other artists that I tend to love and listen to all the time or watch their movies, like, let's say, Michael Jackson. I love Michael Jackson, and I don't think I could actually keep a straight face and not tear up anytime I hear Man in the Mirror. He has had a significant impact on my life. Yet his accusation, you know, the accusations against him with little kids are so incredibly disturbing, and this kind of reminded me of that, and made me confront my own hypocrisy, and it's kind of bothering me. So as a self-proclaimed feminist, I should side with the woman against the accusations against Woody Allen.
But what would that mean? What action would that mean if you were less hypocritical?
If I was less hypocritical, maybe not watch his movies. That would be one thing. Boycotting his movies, actively work to say, you shouldn't be honoring him in this way. But at the same time, I teach film and I tell my students, I will never tell you not to go see a film. I will say go see it. However, have a conversation about it and engage in critical thinking. That is what, like you said, Paul, that's what a liberal education is all about. Mm-hmm. So it's really bothered me. But today there was a great article in The Stranger. The ED of Real Girls wrote an open letter to SIFF, and she made really two points. One of the—
This is the Seattle sort of educational collective of young women in film.
Right, exactly. She made really two points about why they shouldn't be honoring him. One had to do with diversity and saying, why are we honoring yet another white male when we should be— there are other films out there. And I tend to agree with that, because why not have, say, Nate Parker's Birth of a Nation, which is the movie I'm most looking forward to this year. The other one is about a sex predator. You know, why are you honoring a sex predator?
And
Alleged, by the way. That's the thing. I keep coming back to the point is he has not been convicted in a court of law. And that's the point that I keep just sticking on.
So what I'm thinking about this is Woody Allen. What do we know about him? We don't know for sure that any of this happened. Right. We know that this is a murky case. Have you ever covered CPS cases? They're always murky. This one is murky. Woody Allen, in his defense, has tried to make intelligent movies. He's trying to make another one. Apparently, it was kind of boring, is what I've heard. But we're not sitting here, and this word honoring is probably sticking for me. We're showing his film. The way the film festival works is they try to get North American premieres, U.S. premieres. They want something that's fresh to start their film festival. We are not, by that, voting on do we love everything that the director or the actor or anyone else has done.
That's fair. Maybe honoring is in the eye of the beholder. It is the opening night film that kicks
right,
off
so
the
they,
festival.
But they got the premiere. That's what
right.
they're excited
it's,
about
right.
that.
Premiere, exactly.
And
right.
if we sat and voted on every single person's, off nighttime conduct or something, we wouldn't be watching any movies.
But this is a very serious accusation.
It is a very serious. I'm not saying
it's
not
a rape
serious.
Of a 7-year-old girl, and yeah. that's what kills me.
Right,
about
but it's so tortured. We don't actually know if this happened. We
but
know.
Who do we believe, though? So let's say you look at Bill Cosby. Bill Cosby has about 60 women that came out against him. It took that many for us to finally get away from him and see his fall from grace. So if
but he hasn't been convicted either, which was your big sticking point, right?
But my other point was, do I believe the women or do I believe the men?
Yes.
So, you know.
So I'm not condoning a thing. I'm just saying we don't know. This is art. We can't vote on everybody's art. That's what I think.
Okay. Okay, well, I'm having a hard time here because I was a huge fan of Bill Cosby, huge fan, and a huge fan of Woody Allen, both. And that's pretty much been shattered for me. So I'm just speaking personally. I'm not judging about whether these accusations are accurate or not. But for me, it ruins the artistic product. So I'm not interested in going to Woody Allen films anymore. I'm not telling anyone to boycott it. I'm not telling SIFF what to do. I've just lost interest in that particular product, art product from that creator, and I move on to other things. Everyone has trouble with these accusations. I work quite a bit with foster kids, and what people have done to these foster kids is unbelievable. So I can't watch a movie and get into the film, right? Enter the world of the art. And while putting aside how the director has behaved possibly, and that could be just I'm too close to it. So you can experience art separate from the artist, and that's certainly true in history. In the past, we don't even know who's created a building or a painting or something that's come down to us. So maybe in the future, there will be more appreciation of Woody Allen's films just as they are, as an artistic product. But for me, no thanks.
What could a listener...
It's very sad to say that.
And yeah.
Same is true with Bill Cosby, who I think was a brilliant comedian and broke color barriers in TV in the 1960s. I always admired
Cosby,
that.
Though.
Pardon me?
I have my issues with Bill Cosby. I thought his treatment of black culture and especially young black men was not appropriate at all. He talked down to them all the time. He dismissed their journey. I'm not a big fan.
Okay, that's fine. I'm referring to... When he started his career in the 1960s, he was one of the first black stars on TV. Mm-hmm. He insisted on it, that his character in I Spy is equal to the white character. And in 1965 or 66, that's a big deal. Mm-hmm. But in any case, that is in the past. And now that we know more, again, it's that same disappointment of having once been a fan, admired the work to an extent, and then realize, and then just, you know, no thanks.
What could do you feel like you're doing anything, Paul? And what could a listener to us do on behalf of Woody Allen's daughter or any girl or any victim? What can we do? Is this all just kind of patting ourselves on the back, saying how we feel? Is it helping anyone? And if not, what would help?
Well, yes, of course. You could boycott the movies. That's voting with your dollars.
Would that help?
It wouldn't help because this is a past tense situation here. I also want to be clear that I'm not like the completely pro Woody person here, because it is a little creepy. He did marry his wife's adopted daughter,
and he made a
movie
about it.
And so that's creepy. I'm not saying he's like, you know, to be held up as anything.
But
that's creepy.
So Manhattan is a movie about an older man who sleeps with an underage girl.
That's right.
So these are not attractive themes.
One other thing is our capacity to forgive. I think as a society here, this is kind of fascinating. Who do we forgive and who do we not forgive? We tend to love forgiveness if there is remorse involved in all of this. Mm. But since there's been no remorse involved in this at all, there's no apology, there's not even any...
Right. Well, Rita's New York Times piece where he was just completely defensive about it.
Point right here. You're exactly right. Is how the person responds to these accusations and whether they clear it up and address it is important.
Right.
But go ahead.
He addressed it and he didn't clear it up. He said...
That's I think why there's some of us just simply can't forgive, because the remorse is not there.
And I think Woody Allen and other artists have said basically, you'll forgive when you're motivated to forgive for your own personal psychological reasons. Meanwhile, I'm going to keep making art because art is art and your chatter is your chatter.
And it's going to be hit and miss because this movie, from what I've read, was a snooze. So that's maybe the poetic justice.
By the way, there's some speculation that, Amazon produced this movie, and Amazon is one of the many sponsors of the Seattle International Film Festival. Some people felt like, SIFF feels compelled...
Well, that maybe explains how they,
who knows?
How they got the premiere. That's more explanatory to me of how that all came about.
I wish they've gotten a different film. Like I said, Nate Parker's Birth of a Nation, for instance, would have been an amazing statement about what SIFF is doing.
Seattle International Film Festival continues. I've heard it's the biggest film festival in the country. It goes almost a month. I have hundreds of films. Whether that's a good thing or not, but it's big and sprawling and rich.
It's a wonderful festival. And I would like to shout out a tribute to one of the co-founders, Dan Ireland, who died about 2 weeks ago in Los Angeles.
And I love it when Nancy Guppy is the host of it.
Any relation, Paul Guppy?
Yeah.
Yeah, about that. We're going to talk about when is your local public park too commercialized? And is there such a thing as going too fast when it comes to a civil right? Lately, transgender, we can connect that to a lot of other debates coming up. Name that movie. I'm sure it's a Woody Allen movie. No? It sounded so old-timey, I assumed it was a Woody Allen movie. Maybe a listener will tweet that to us, at KOW. I might be wrong. This is KOW's Week in Review. I'm Bill Radke. How many times have you all been to Lake Sammamish State Park? Any idea?
Probably four times. I thought it was great. Nice park, underused.
Never been, underused.
I've been there a dozen times or more.
How about Marymore Park?
Also, same thing.
Lots of baseball games there, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and what's the circus, Cirque du Soleil, and movies and all kinds of events at Marymore. Yes, Lake Sammamish State Park is considered underutilized. And it's getting a makeover that includes a proposal for REI to put its outdoor school there with classes and offices and an outdoor stage and equipment rental. Zeki, is that too commercial for a public park?
All right. So you got to look at parks from I have two questions about that. What is the purpose of a public park? And the second one, who's responsible for paying for it? So the purpose of it, I think, is to give the public a respite from this concrete jungle that we live in. And whose responsibility is to pay for it? I think a city is defined by its public spaces. I do think it's government's responsibility. It's a good use of taxpayer money, whether it's federal, state, or local. So this I am really, really weary of a corporation stepping in to a public park because I think that just kind of opens the door. We have REI one day, and then we can have Quiznos and AT&T the next. Mm-hmm. And I am being advertised to at every moment of my life. Wherever I go, I'm being advertised to. I do not want to be advertised to when I'm at a public park. I just want to enjoy a trip.
I don't even want the ducks asking me for food. Right. Which shilling, okay?
It was ducks. Never worked a day in their life.
Never did.
It's called duck privilege. Go ahead. Do you agree, Paul?
Right. So we were talking about intellectual diversity earlier, so I'm proud to be a limited government conservative. I usually think people should be free to make their own decisions and voluntary transactions. But when it comes to parks, I'm a socialist. I'm a Bernie Sanders socialist.
Oh, yeah?
And the reason is because of public policy.
Now you tell us after all this time.
No, it's fairly straightforward. A park is, you know, it's like a road or it's like the police. I mean, or the fire department. It's something that the government has to provide us to serve in the public interest. That's number one. I think that they should be fully funded. I do think there's a kind of a tactic that's used in government, which is to underfund popular programs and then people try to argue for it in order to get
private funding.
Yeah, so there's this kind of switch where I think parks should be top priority.
Are you saying Washington State underfunds Lake Sammamish State Park in the hopes that—
In this particular case, I'm not sure, but I know that inside government, sometimes there's a tactic of saying this program is really popular and so we're not going to fund it 100% because we know that the public reaction will help us get more revenue or something like that. I don't know if that's happening here. So
we might hear some reaction to that. Go on.
So, and you're exactly right. Parks are a place for us to get into nature and to escape from the world where we're constantly bombarded by messages. Having said that, there is a role for private contracting for competitive bidding, but only if it serves the managers of the public agency. So if running a park, if you want to hire a private landscaping company and you get a good price on that, I think that's fine. National parks have concessions and the lodges are run by private companies. But the look of it is entirely determined by government officials. Mm-hmm. So you don't have Coca-Cola State Park. And even when you go to Mount Rainier Lodge or Olympic National Park, which has private contractors inside the park, it's very low key. You don't see advertising. There's no advertising, fortunately, and there's no branding. Great. So if REI, you know, builds a facility, there may be a way to do that. But as long as the experience of the public and by the way, 100% access for everybody to the park all the time at no charge. And so to me, that's a bottom line value, and that any kind of private company needs to serve the purposes of the public interest.
RAI classes and activities with no logo, you're okay?
Well, so if they can do like a discrete logo, but
discrete logo.
Again, that should be driven
on the underside of the paddleboard. You only see it if you
under
fall
the
in.
Cushion.
Yeah. No, it's whatever. At the bottom of the lake. You have to go all the way down.
So I don't know what the.
If you've come this far, we'd like you to know that the bottom of this lake is underwritten by
the Ford Motor Company.
Yeah.
Well, that's a great point. So
okay, while you
answer
that, I would love to get into this conversation. And I would like
I'll just wrap up by saying I think it should be any logo or look should be determined by the government, not by the company.
All right. Well, I'm with you for a second here. I'm with you on the fact that the voters of Seattle and King County, but the state is different on funding, pay a lot of money for parks. The state parks is a little bit underfunded if you know their budget item. But that said, I am not so holy about all of this. I kind of like public-private partnerships when they're done right. So remember, the state actively asked for proposals. This wasn't REI marching in there, you know, with their little sun protector hats and their backpacks with, you know, ice axes and said, we need to take this park over. None of that actually happened. State parks asked if somebody has a proposal. What's the proposal? A national outdoor school. Well, that's really, you know, that's not Burger King, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. That's a whole different thing.
What if it was Cabela's teaching riflery and gun safety?
Well, then we'd have quite a longer conversation.
Well, what about that? I mean, really, because is it about whether you like the company or not?
No, but I mean, there is a connection to outdoor use.
But if you like REI, somebody...
So it's Cabela's.
Cabela's is outdoor use.
Yeah, that's an outdoor use that has a danger to it. I don't see what the kayakers are going to do to anyone who's walking around without the right, you know, vest on or something like that. So I think as public-private partnerships go, all the concerns that you folks have could be addressed. We joked, but the REI doesn't have to be like a big, giant, screaming thing. It could be just part of how this works in a national outdoor school. There was an administrative building I wasn't too
But it's dangerous because
with.
It opens up the door to other partnerships that we might really
And we have find. Those. Weyerhaeuser Federal Way Swimming Pool.
Well, I'm not saying it's
Things
right.
Things are going just, swimmingly there, I'm telling you.
But I think my argument is that it just opens the door to partnerships.
And then what happens?
You like some corporations and you don't like some. So it's just a dangerous precedent to set. I think
matters. I think the fact that people would be encouraged to use the lake next to the beach by REI does matter.
By the way, why should we make parks more used? What's wrong with Sammamish State Park being quiet? It's kind of lovely to walk around. Don't we want to get away from the hustle and the bustle?
But I didn't ask
trying to make more hustle and bustle.
State Parks actively asked, went out and said, hey, who wants to help us with this park? Now, if they want to take it back, I'm good with quiet. Sounds wonderful.
Did they ask for that because they don't have money?
Yes, state parks are underfunded.
Right,
hello, everybody.
That's the whole problem.
Hello.
Seattle, now I'm giving things away. Seattle has dozens, if not hundreds, of secret pocket parks and green spaces around the city that only the local neighborhood people know about, and they want to keep it that way.
I would tweet out a link to that if I could. But, yeah.
Indeed.
And expose all the secret. We could do a remote. We could do this show from a formerly secret pocket park.
Yeah, no, I'm not giving out any.
Feel like I've seen that map somewhere.
You could hear a loon drop on KUOW. This is the Week in Review. Friends of Lake Sammamish State Park trying to rejuvenate that place for better or for worse, restoring native habitat, a new bathhouse and boat docks, a protected swimming area, and maybe an RAI outdoor school and equipment rental. More of KUOW's Week in Review is just ahead. Joni Balter, Zeki Hamid, Paul Guppy, and I'm Bill Radke reviewing the news of this week for you on the Week in Review. If it gets enough signatures, you will be voting this fall on a Washington State initiative to make transgender people use the bathroom that corresponds with the gender on their birth certificate. Is this part of a backlash that the Obama administration has brought on itself? The White House has told states they must let transgender students use facilities that match the gender they identify with, or the states could lose billions of dollars in federal school funding. The lieutenant governor of Texas says his state will not yield to blackmail. He's urging Texas school superintendents to defy the new federal guidance. Is there such a thing as going too fast when it comes to civil rights, Joni?
So what I want to start with is that it's not backlash, and the reason is because of the timing. They started gathering signatures for the Washington measure.
But the signatures are being gathered now, so there may or may not be backlash.
Timing-wise, they started before.
I'm not talking about the launch of the initiative. We're just talking in general about whether the Obama... The question is it possible to go too fast when it comes to civil rights? There was just a New York Times op-ed on the subject. It's been the we talked about it sort of during same-sex marriage, right? Many times.
Right.
Is there ever such a thing as hitting the gas too much and not bringing the public along with you when it comes to civil rights?
So, yes. So I'm 100% on the side of the transgender folks here. But that said, I do think that Obama came out, he skipped a few steps in federal rulemaking. And what happens is you create a backlash of that. You make that in the example you just cited in Texas. And so I think that the very thought-provoking piece in the New York Times by the Yale professor says it's not that we're against doing this. It's that by issuing this rule for public schools without having a public comment period, come on, guys, we all love our process around here and as part of this. And by skipping that step, I mean, I felt on the one hand, editorial writers aren't supposed to have two hands, but here we go. On the one hand, that Obama was thinking, boy, my time is running out, and I really believe this, and I want to take care of this so transgender students in schools don't have to feel bad about going to the bathrooms. On the other hand, you do not want to go so fast that you create this negative backlash to what you're doing. And he may, in fact, have done that.
Zeki, is the White House going too fast?
Well, look, this is just a solution in search of a problem, this whole bathroom issue. So the question is, do you believe that transgender people are human beings with human rights, or you don't? Because if you do, then you would agree with the president, and I very much agree with the swift and decisive action. So I'm just going to quote here. This is Martin Luther King Jr. wrote his best letter that he's ever written, I think, is a letter from a Birmingham City jail. Now, I'm not equating the civil rights fight with this, but this is this little section here, I think, it pertains to it. The quote is, "For years now, I have heard the word wait. It rings with a piercing familiarity. This wait has almost always meant never. It has been a tranquilizing thalidomide, relieving the emotional stress for a moment, only to give birth to an ill-informed infant of frustration. We must come to see it with a distinguished jurist of yesterday that justice too long delayed is justice denied. When it comes, this is a civil rights issue, this is a human rights issue, and we cannot wait, we cannot have process. I love what the president did, I fully agree with him."
Paul Guppy?
Yeah, speaking of reading great texts, see, that's what liberal arts is all about. Really, really great writing.
As we discussed a few minutes ago.
Exactly. And Letter from Birmingham Jail, which I've read several times. I guess if you're sitting in jail, you have lots of time to work on the quality of the product because it's first class. On this issue, I'm on the side of everybody who wants to use the bathroom. I don't have any problem with that. But I do have a problem with asking what is happening to our self-government. And I think the transgender bathroom issue is just the culmination of a lot of frustration that's been building up over many, many years, where people are asking themselves, what is happening to our democracy? Something called a Dear Colleague letter is issued by the Department of Education in Washington, D.C., and suddenly every school district in America has to comply. And I think that's, you know, people don't like to be manipulated. The New York Times seems to be arguing for, if we just do the propaganda better and bring people along, they'll agree with the result that we've already determined. So people don't like to be bullied or railroaded or manipulated. They like a regular process in which their elected representatives or an initiative petition or, you know, the two greatest words in America are let's vote.
But people sometimes like to deny civil rights, too. So, sure. So on what do you do with that? We don't like to be bullied.
Right.
But does
so
that
you,
mean...
So you have a national debate. In the case of civil rights legislation, and the reason I think that we made a lot of progress is because Congress passed a bill in 1965 and in 1964. So Voting Rights Act, Civil Rights Act, even if you go back to the 1860s when the Constitution was amended, this was all done through democratic process where elected representatives voted on the bills and the president signed them. Regarding the transgender...
A lot of protests in there, too.
Exactly.
But that's the thing.
But wait a minute, okay? But we get to a decision, and that's what democracy is about, is we voted and we decided.
Okay. And I feel like will have that chance with when
then
this
let's
initiative
do it,
comes
okay?
up.
In this state, a lot of people support traditional marriage. They oppose the bill that changed the definition of marriage in state law. The legislature passed it. We have a referendum rule in this state. So they passed it in whenever it was, March or April. In November, the public voted on it. And the people who were trying to defeat it lost. They were outvoted. And that's a democratic process. And I think that's what's missing on this issue. And what I'll just circle right back around is that what really offends me is how micro do the bureaucrats and the regulators have to get when they issue a letter that says...
But what if it's micro to you, but not micro to the person who believes their civil right is at stake?
Then let's vote on it. Then they should persuade
majority
people,
rule.
Right. Persuade people of the rightness of their cause, which is what the civil rights movement was doing. And do it through an open democratic process.
Okay. You know, first of all, as much as I love LBJ, it's not because of him that the Civil Rights and Civil Voting Rights Act happened. It's because of the movement. It's because of
sure.
Martin Luther
sure.
King,
but he
John
eventually,
Lewis.
But
it is the movement that sparked that. They
right.
pushed LBJ to pass that.
Exactly.
So I'm not going to just equate that with just him. I love him. But there is a lot of outside forces.
But my point is that they won. Okay, whether even if LBJ
I know they won,
didn't
but it
won.
Took a long time. These are human rights. And that's the thing. We were talking earlier about, do you know people that are being transgressed upon, right? Do you know these people? And, you know, we were talking in the case of Muslims, some people are easy to demonize Muslims, but maybe they've never met a Muslim in their lives. Have you met a transgender person? Do you have a transgender person in your life?
So the point is that a dictatorship would be a lot faster. See, that's what we're getting down to.
When
someone
human
has
rights,
decided
though.
The issue in advance, it's just a matter of pushing it on people. And that's what the general public.
You're not pushing anything. You're just saying that you deserve the same human rights as everybody else. It's about equality.
Sure, but what does that mean and what does that look like?
It means you get to use
the
bathroom.
North Carolina are trying to figure out. Exactly, but you're dictating an answer.
So I agree that it's a solution.
I'm not disagreeing.
Okay. I haven't heard from Joni in a bit.
I agree that the whole problem here is a solution in search of a problem. Totally agree. I'm totally on board for transgender bathrooms that you identify with. I'm mostly talking about the process. The question is, and by the way, clarification for you there, that it wasn't the New York Times editorial board speaking. That was an op-ed from a Yale law professor. So it's not okay. like the New York Times said. Let's be clear on that. But the gist of it is, you're asking Bill a very good question.
New York Times.
Did they go too far too fast? Maybe. Maybe they went too far too fast because they create this exact kind of backlash.
Well,
I'm all
right.
on board for the rights.
Okay.
Wait till you get a Dear Colleague letter on an issue that you don't agree with. That's the problem, is that when federal agencies just
I'll check the mail,
issuing
I promise.
Dictates, and in this case, it goes your way. Well, what happens when an issue comes up that it doesn't go your way?
Okay.
I'm allowing that with my arguments.
Initiative 1515 may or may not make it onto your November ballot. This would be a Washington State initiative. Which would make it so transgender people use the bathroom, the locker room that corresponds with the gender on their birth certificate. We'll be talking about this more. We've laid out, I think, an important argument now. Is it ever, when, if ever, is it right to go slow when it comes to civil rights? And over the next months, you can make up your own mind about how you come down and possibly vote on this issue. It's KOW's Week in Review. Back in a moment.
Oh, yeah.
KOW's Week in Review. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Bill Radke with Paul Guppy, Joni Balter, Zeki Hamid. It's 36 years this week since Mount St. Helens erupted. It happened a few months before I moved here. It happened in 1980. Every page of my Nebraska high school yearbook says, "Good luck in Seattle, if it's still there."
Uh-huh.
Also, stay cool, dude, class of 82. And stay sweet. This week, the Seattle Times reports there's an ongoing swarm of earthquakes under the volcano and the magma chamber slowly recharging. But it's not about to blow, Joni. You doing okay?
I'm doing okay, but having those flashbacks, yes, indeed.
Tell me about your flashbacks.
So I was a little baby reporter at Como Radio at the time, and I remember this happening. I flew over the crater with "This is Brian Johnson," and it was the coolest thing I've ever seen.
How soon after the blast did you fly over?
So the blast was on Sunday, and this was the next evening, Monday night.
Wow.
And it was like the coolest thing you've ever seen. I will point out that there was, and I can't think of his name, but there was this Como radio reporter. Might have been TV, but I think he was radio. He managed to take two cars in and lose both of them as the debris was coming down the mountain. So that was like a pretty cool asterisk to the whole thing. Mm. Two cars went up, all the mountains coming down, goes back, gets another car, and loses that one on the other side.
Memory?
Well, I remember it really well. I was living in Seattle. I mean, I grew up here. And a couple of things maybe that most people don't realize looking back is the tremendous shock the morning that it went up. So the UW scientists had been monitoring it for months. It was reported on the news, seismographic readings, rumbling, and there was a dome building inside.
Yeah, lava dome.
They're monitoring it. News helicopters are flying over it. And then one morning, kaboom, you know, the upper third of the mountain, you know, evaporated.
That was the unexpected part, right? That it was going to be a lateral blast and it was going to blow out.
Yeah, just that there was
this, killed like 50 people.
Equal to a nuclear explosion going off in the southern part of the state. And then the other thing that people don't often realize is it wasn't a one-time event. So all through the summer, it continued to erupt.
Yep.
And you could see an enormous cloud of ash rising up into the sky from every Seattle neighborhood. If you went to the beach, you would see it, you know, up in the air. The good news is for us is that the wind was going in the other direction. So all
right.
of the ash ended up going to eastern Washington and other places. But you could see it through the summer, and it was something that was really memorable.
Seki, how do you feel about living in a volatile place like that?
I never really gave volcanoes much thought. I was a little desert boy growing up in Jordan, so we did not have any volcanoes or anything like that. My only association with a volcano was actually through a cartoon. All the cartoons that we had were Japanese animation cartoons that were dubbed in Arabic. And there's one specific one, it's like a superhero thing. There's a big, and he fights aliens, and he was born in a volcano.
Huh?
So in one time, he was fighting this alien, and the alien like, threw him in the volcano as if to kill him. And me and my friends are sitting down there, and we go, oh, my God, he doesn't know that that's where he gets his power. They're going to kill all the aliens now. Yeah.
Was his name Helen?
And his name was Jungar.
Oh, okay.
So that's my association with volcanoes right there.
36 years ago this week, Mount St. Jungar erupted, and we're remembering that. And there's a swarm of earthquakes still happening. The magma chamber moves around as it does. And so far as we know, it's not going to blow anytime soon.
That's good.
Sorry, our people who come far after us.
Should we buy volcano insurance?
Yeah, probably so. This is KOW's Week in Review. Any quick headlines things that you're going to be talking about this weekend? Something we didn't mention, Joni?
Hey, hey, ho, ho, Bernie Sanders has to go.
Oh, it's time for that, huh?
Throw down.
Yeah, well, okay, well, maybe we'll argue that in the coming months as Bernie Sanders overstayed his welcome. Zeki?
I'm going to be talking about my beloved Seattle Sounders.
Mm. Oh.
And it depends on what happens tomorrow. Is the conversation going to be positive or negative? So we'll see.
Paul Geppi, Washington Policy Center?
Well, I love to talk about movies and new things that are happening in the movies. And so what I've been commenting about is Jungle Book, which is spectacular, wonderfully produced. But then
you got 20 seconds.
A little on the downside is Captain America, which I also liked, but it's starting to disturb me, the interface between computer-generated presentation and then the live action.
Oh, yeah.
So how that melds together it doesn't always work for me.
Paul Guppy, Joni Balter, Zeki Hamid with you. For real, this actually happened. This has not been animated. KOW's Week in Review on KOW 94.9 Seattle.